your fellowship once again. I think every time I look up, I see new faces here. And I keep wanting to repeat everything I've said so you all get in and all the things that we've already talked about. And I'm not going to do that now, although I do want to assure you who are here first today that though what I say this morning might appear to be a little negative, that actually we've attempted in some of the things that I've said to establish a rationale and a base for our motivation as we move forward in the great work of Christian education. I think that the task of Christian education is one of the most pressing responsibilities that confronts the church today, and all of us are called upon to be involved in this, each in our own way. Some of us are ministers of the gospel, some are parents, some are school board members, some are teachers, and we have to unite together and recognize that this is one of the needs of the hour. We really have no choice. We've got to be busy in the great work of Christian education. It's going to be a lot of work. When you look at what work has been expended here in the city of Memphis during the last few years here in this Christian school, and you see what has been accomplished, it's very encouraging. But when you think of the tremendous work for Christian education that has to be done in this area, in this city, before a real impact is going to be made, what a tremendous effort this is going to demand on the part of all of us, all committed Christian people. That's why this conference is so important, and that's why I have attempted to establish the rationale that stands behind this motivation. And I understand that tapes have been made of this, and if any of you have any questions about what I've said up to this point, perhaps you can get the tapes. Now, what I would like to do this morning is, as I say, somewhat negative perhaps at the outset, it may appear to be that way, but I would like to analyze the basic orientations of public education in the United States at this time. Because it seems to me that one of the impulses that drive us as Christians forward in the great work of Christian education is that we recognize that whatever else you want to say about public education, it is not something which we may use for the education of our children. What I have to say about public education this morning is on the level of the theoretical, and I hope you will accept it in that way. I don't mean to be hysterical in my description of the state of public education. I hope that this will be a dispassionate and even, in a sense, disinterested, objective analysis of the kind of situation that obtains in public education at the present moment. But it's the kind of thing that we should be thinking about. You know, we as Christians, we can get all excited about certain subjects in connection with public education. For example, sex education in the public school. Or we can become very disturbed because we see that the discipline situation in the public school is not what we would like it to be. Or we can talk about the fact that there are pushers of dope in a lot of our public schools. Now, all of these things may be true, and they may be very deplorable. But we as Christians have to understand that there are basic structural things wrong with public education, quite apart from the fact that there are also these discipline problems and dope-pushing problems and that kind of thing. And we have to be totally aware of these structural inadequacies in public education, because I do believe that if we had been alert 10, 15, 20 years ago, these very same things that I'm talking about today, they were already present in public education then, and if we would have been alert and would have been seeing what was happening, we would have had something to offer to our time today by means of Christian education. So that's why I go into this. Not to be excessively critical, but simply to point out that as far as Christians are concerned, there's nothing wrong with public education. for non-Christians. There's absolutely nothing wrong with it. A man who has a materialistic view of the world, who is essentially an atheist in his orientation, he has every right in the world to educate his children in terms of the norms that today govern public education. But public education becomes intolerable when it is presented to the American citizenry as the only kind of education which may exist without penalty or prejudice within our culture. And people like you and me who believe in the Lord Jesus Christ are in many instances forced to use this kind of education for our children. Now this is intolerable, and we have to stand up. We have to be counted for the cause of Jesus, and we have to be able to say, now look, this form of education, though perfectly adequate for the unbeliever, cannot serve us for these reasons. And I'd like to talk about those reasons. I think we've got to have them very clearly in our minds. The first of them is this. As Christians, when we evaluate public education, we must be struck, first of all, by the functioning of the evolutionistic model in connection with the conduct of public education. Now, when we think about the matter of evolution, we generally restrict this to the study of origins, in the sense that we say, yes, indeed, when our children study anthropology or when they study biology, they are confronted with certain data which flow out of an evolutionistic view of the world. Characteristically, this has been described as saying, for example, man has come from monkeys. And right here in your state, of course, you've had the monkey trials, which have created a great deal of interest on a national level. Now, all of these things are important. The fact that this kind of data is introduced in the studies in the public school, but that's not the most important. The most important is that today, in education, the evolutionary model for the universe, for human life, for society, is simply assumed. It's assumed. The various goals that are set up for the educational process, the way the schools are to be ordered, the way the classrooms are to be run, all of this is determined by certain presuppositions which are essentially evolutionistic. For example, a couple of months ago, Daedalus magazine came out, and I have a copy of it here. I don't happen to have the one to which I'm referring. This is a very important journal. It's put out by the Academy, the American Academy of Arts and Sciences. And it was discussing the governing of the university in the United States. And it was so striking in reading many of the articles that in almost every instance, certain orientations which were drawn from an evolutionary view of the world were built into the very structure of the university, the way it would be governed. Such processes as the survival of the fittest, for example, the adaptability of the organism to its environment, these became the models that the educators were using in order to describe what their schools should be and what they should become. Now, this is extremely important for us because we are creationists, I believe. We are creationists. We believe that God created the world, that all reality must be related to Him, that human history is not simply a mechanical conglomeration of accidental events, but we believe that human history proceeds beneath the providential guidance of God who has created all things. And when we set up our schools, when we determine how they're going to function, how they're going to educate our children, we want the right not only to teach our children that God created the world, But we want the right to exhibit our understanding that this is the kind of a universe we're living in as we establish our curricula on various levels, as we determine what's going to go into subject content. We want to build our schools on a creationist model rather than an evolutionistic model. And it is because of this dominance of the evolutionistic model in the conduct of public education on every level today that public education is not really useful for the Christian community. The second place, I think that when we look at public education, we have to observe that there is an essential paralysis that is built in to the public educational system, or looked at from a little different point of view, an essential frivolity, an essential triviality that is built into the process of public education. This is what I mean. Education, by definition, is a process in society whereby one generation passes on useful information to the coming generation in order to prepare the generation that's coming up for a certain future, a certain future. Education is future-oriented, has to be. We've gone through the mill as grown-ups, adults. We've had certain facts that have enabled us to operate successfully and to move forward in this age. Now, we want our children to have the same. Education is a future-oriented process. Now then, public education in the United States does not have any satisfactory model of the future. And consequently, the process of selectivity, which is a part of the educational process, becomes completely inoperative in public education. You've got to make selections when you teach your children something. You've got to have a certain idea of the future in mind, and you've got to prepare them for that future. So what are you going to teach them? There are literally millions of facts that you're going to teach your children. Literally millions of them. So what are you going to do? Are you going to try to pump them with as many as you can possibly work into their educational experience so that they will be ready for the future, whatever it happens to be? Or are you very carefully going to select the things that are going to have to be known insofar as you determine what the future is going to be, as far as you can figure out what it's going to be? Now, the educational process today in public education, because it has no real understandings of the goals to which mankind is moving and no real kind of a model of the future with which to work, the process of selectivity is almost completely crippled. Robert Maynard Hutchins, whom some of you may know, is a very important educator, a man who's written some very theoretical material in the realm of education, formerly the chancellor of the University of Chicago, and later on working at the Center for the Study of Democratic Institutions, the head of it, I believe, in California. Robert Maynard Hutchins has pointed out that practically every fact to which he was exposed during the course of his education, on every level, grade school all the way through law school, he was trained as a lawyer, essentially, almost every fact has become obsolete, worthless, useless. And that's why I say that the public educational process, since it does not have a clear understanding of the goals to which mankind must be moving, must be, of necessity, essentially paralyzed when it comes to functioning usefully in selecting the kinds of things our children must know. And so the facts that are presented, though they may be impressive at the moment, are going to be, in most instances, trivial and even frivolous. Now, very closely related to this is the fact, and this is the third item that I want to mention in public education, is that public education is today an educational system which is functioning with a kind of internal collapse built into it, a kind of incoherence, lack of integrity, a kind of fractured quality which is leaving the children who are exposed to it completely at loose ends. And in that connection, I'd like to read a few things from this very interesting book that has recently been produced in connection with the great crisis in our environment. This is called the Environmental Handbook, and it has been prepared for the environmental teach-in that's going to be held on the 22nd of this month throughout the United States and some of the universities. And there is here an article by John Fisher, who is originally or formerly one of the editors of Harper's Magazine, and I think you'll find it very, very interesting and important in that it describes the central lack of coherence in our educational system and what it's doing to the children. First of all, he quotes a letter from a University of California senior. She's a girl. This is what she said. "It gets pretty depressing to watch what is going on in the world and realize that your education is not equipping you to do anything about it." And then John Fisher comments on this sentence from this girl's letter. He says this: "This girl is not a radical. She's never taken part in any demonstration. She will graduate with honors and profound disillusionment. From listening to her and a good many like-minded students at California and East Coast campuses, I think I am beginning to understand what they mean when they say that their education isn't relevant. They mean that it is incoherent. It doesn't cohere. It consists of bits and pieces which don't stick together and have no common purpose. One of our leading Negro educators, Arthur Lewis of Princeton University, recently summed it up better than I can. This is what he said: America is the only country where youngsters are required to fritter away their precious years in meaningless peregrination from subject to subject, spending 12 weeks getting some tidbits of religion, 12 weeks learning French, 12 weeks seeing whether the history professor is stimulating, 12 weeks seeking entertainment from the economics professor, 12 weeks confirming that one is not going to be able to master calculus. These fragments are meaningless because they are not organized around any central purpose or vision of the world. The typical liberal arts college has no clearly defined goals. It offers a smorgasbord of courses in hopes that if a student nibbles at a few dishes from the humanities table, plus a snack of science and a garnish of art or anthropology, he may emerge as a cultivated man, whatever that means." Now, I read that rather lengthy quotation because I think that it shows precisely the state of modern public education. This is talking about it, of course, on the upper levels in connection with the college and the university. But this lack of coherence, this fragmentation, this smorgasbord quality to the educational process is built in to education without God, to education without goals.
to education without real purposes. This is why our young people today are turning to drugs, for example. Do you think that they're turning to drugs today because they're naughtier than the older generation? No, that's not the reason. They're turning to drugs today because these young people have been exposed to an educational process that has left them at utter loose ends. And try as they will, they're going to, if necessary, risk their lives and even their sanity in order to find a couple of moments of meaning. And if LSD is going to do it, they're going to try it. That's how desperate they are. There are many of them motivated along this line to try these awesome, distressing forms of finding meaning in the world. This is because the educational process in the United States has existed without any integrating principles of any kind. And this is true of public education on every level. And we've got to understand that. That's a fact. And there doesn't seem to be any particular help for it either in the United States of America, so long as we insist that we will, with all the determination of our democratic processes, keep the word of the living God, the message of the Bible, the power of Jesus Christ out of education. And so this is the third thing I mentioned, the fact that public education today is essentially incoherent and lacks effectiveness in producing whole people. Then there's one other thing I want to talk about, and that is this. With all of this, public education in our country is an education which is becoming the promulgator of a new kind of religion. Public education has taken, of course, a stance against organized religion, sectarian religion, evangelical Protestantism, and yet with all of its lack of ability to produce a coherent form of education, it tries to import a kind of a value system which grows out of a deification of the democratic process. And in this connection, I want to refer to this magazine, Daedalus. This is no demagogue, of course, who writes in this magazine. I'm going to quote just a few words from Northrop Frye, who is a very significant literary critic, in a very lengthy article. This is what he says. Compulsory and universal schooling, combined with the attempt to instill concerned social attitudes as part of the educational process, have turned the schools into a kind of secular church, in which, where Jesus is denied still, there is an attempt made to teach children that somehow or another the democratic ideals that have stood at the foundation of the American democratic system must now become the totally governing aspects of their lives. The democratic ideals, often described without any reference to Jesus Christ and to God. Peter Berger, a very eminent sociologist, a very astute man insofar as the understanding of the quality of American culture is concerned, has said this. The point a case can be made for the fact that the public school in the United States has become the foremost prophet for a new form of secular religion. Secular religion. A religion that has been divorced very deliberately from every sectarian form a religion that is at its very best idealistic humanism, at its worst materialistic humanism, the same humanism that stands at the center of Marxism. Now, this, it seems to me, is an objective description of the state of affairs in public education at the present moment. It is an educational system which is dominated by an evolutionary model. It is an educational system which is essentially incapable of making proper choices with respect to selection of subject matter as it prepares children for the future. It is an educational system that is structurally incoherent and fragmented, and with it all, willy-nilly, it continues to set forth a kind of secular religion that is opposed to the very heart of the Christian faith. Now then, when we as Christians look at this kind of a picture in the educational scene in the United States, when we see that Christian education becomes wonderfully attractive, it becomes a kind of a thing that is worth pursuing with all of our effort and with all of our strength, against the background of the educational chaos that dominates our world at the present moment, Christian education is first of all wonderfully attractive, simply because Christian education is essentially principial and moral rather than exclusively factual. Oh, we want to bring our children the facts. They've got to know the facts. So far as setting up our schools are concerned, as far as setting up this school is concerned, we're very concerned about the state requirements for education in the state of Tennessee. We want to be sure that the children who attend this school are children who know as much about this world as the children who attend the public school. We've got to cover the same ground in many respects we do. But as we cover that ground, we do not cover that ground simply in blind slavery to the facts that we study. But along with the facts, we present our children with various essential principles, various understandings of themselves, of their God, and of this world that enable them to use the facts that are presented to them to their greatest advantage. In Christian education, we can provide our children with a tremendously potent educational instrument. You know, we're moving into an era, the next few years, and everybody recognizes this, that the whole matter of education is going to be up for grabs. And one thing is going to happen, that's this, that education is not going to end by the time you get to the end of high school or by the time you get to the end of college. But the kind of highly diversified and technical world into which we're moving is going to be the kind of a world in which all people are going to be required to continue the educational process until finally they retire. Education is going to become a mode of life. And in this kind of a world, facts as such become somewhat differently important than they were, for example, in 1930, when you learned a certain set of facts and they serve you the rest of your life. Not the man who knows all kinds of facts is going to be the one who reacts successfully to the crises that confront us, but the men and the women who have grand, noble, important principles and ways of looking at this world at the center of their souls, they're the ones who will be able to continue the learning process in their own experience. And they're the ones who are going to be able to make a contribution to our country and to our world. on the long term. Christian education becomes wonderfully attractive when you see it against the background of the chaos of the present day, because, and that's the first thing that I've just spoken about, because it is essentially principial, moral, rather than exclusively factual. And then against the background of this situation in public education, Christian education is also extraordinarily attractive, because Christian education brings to the educational process something that is absolutely priceless under the present circumstances. It brings the opportunity, the possibility for coherence, for integration, so that young people have an opportunity in being exposed to their subjects to bring them all together and to see them as a useful whole. Principles of selection can be exercised in connection with Christian education that can never operate in connection with public education. And Christian students taught by Christian parents, by Christian teachers in a Christian school, are going to have an opportunity to understand their world far, far better than those who are exposed to those kinds of educational processes which are simply a hodgepodge of subjects and facts and ideas presented by all kinds of people under all kinds of circumstances. Even in the university, where the professor in some instances has an opportunity to express his own ideological position, even then, students at the public universities today, at the great state universities today, they end up with a whole lot of information about that ideology and that one and another one, and they finally come out with the feeling that it must be that simply every idea is as good as every other idea, and it's most likely true that no ideas are really worth anything at all. This is the way they finally end up. But within the framework of the Christian school, we can begin already when our children are beginning to unfold in kindergarten. When our children, in many respects, are at the height of their learning process, already they can begin to see that the knowledge they must acquire must be brought into a relationship to God and His Word and to their faith. Beautiful. Beautiful when you send your children to a Christian school. Just beautiful to have a child learn, for example, such essential skills as reading, let's say, within a context that has been impregnated with the point of view of the Bible. And as the educational process begins on that level, so that the child sees everything as one package, all related to the great creative work of the Lord Jesus Christ. And it progresses along through grade school and high school and college. At the end of the road, you're going to have young people of poise and perspective and power. Young people who are going to be able to make a contribution in this world in which we're living now. But not only does the Christian educational system become very attractive as we think about it in terms of the coherence and the integrity, the integration that it can impose upon education itself, but Christian education is so wonderfully attractive because with Christian education, the child's total experience can be integrated. His education in school and his education within the Christian whole. They can become one unity. The little child who learns how to pray to Jesus from his mother finds the same Jesus when he goes to school. What a wonderful experience that is. When the home and the school are tied together in a dynamic, glorious, God-fearing and God-honoring package of activity. What a wonderful thing that is.
You know, I guess all of us, as Christian people, we're pretty disturbed by the fact that we're all pretty afraid about our children. What's going to happen to them? Father and mother are Christians, but are our children going to be Christians when they grow older? We say, oh, we have to tell our children the way of salvation. We have to hope that they make a decision for the Lord early. Just as early as possible. Well, we have to do that with our children. I agree with that. But you know, we as evangelical Christians, we've got to wake up and we've got to see that it just isn't one of the rules of the kingdom of God to think that you can take your children and you can bring them up in the fear of the Lord and then you can expose them 5 days a week, almost every day of the week, for nearly 40 weeks of the year, from the time they're kindergartners to the time they get through university, to a secular, godless form of education. Do you realize what you're doing to your children when you do that to them? Now, maybe when some of your children were growing up, the situation wasn't as acute as it is today. But do you realize what you're doing to your children when you bring them to church and you bring them to Sunday school and you worship the Lord Jesus Christ together as a family? And then they spend most of those most informative and formative parts of their lives in a situation that is pagan, opposed diametrically. The only thing that can happen, the only thing that can happen if a child is going to maintain his sanity, and it's that crucial, maintain his sanity. The only thing he can do is take his religion after a while and put it in a kind of compartment in his mind and say, oh yes, that's my religion. When I go to church on Sunday, then I become involved in that. Then I sing hymns and I listen to the preacher preach and I make my presence known in the church. That's my religion. But it doesn't have any relationship to what I do with my mind. That's the only thing a child can do to keep his sanity, to keep from going completely berserk. These are completely contradictory positions, you see. The position that we hold and we confess in the Christian faith. I believe in God the Father Almighty, maker of heaven and earth, and in Jesus Christ, his only begotten Son, our Lord. That position on the one hand, and that religious position that stands at the center of the educational process in the United States today, these are completely contradictory. And to try to force our children to live in those two worlds is to impose upon them a cross that no man has ever been made capable of carrying. He has to find, something has to happen. Something has to snap inside. He'll either have to compartmentalize his religion, or he'll have to keep his religion and deny his education. Or he will have to finally deny his religion. That's what usually happens. Let's be honest. That's what usually happens. How many of you don't have sons and daughters who have been taken away from the Lord because they've been exposed to thought processes that refuse to acknowledge the Lordship of Jesus, though they still come home at Thanksgiving Day and they still come home at Christmas time, and you all gather around the table and you say your prayers and maybe you sing a few hymns, and this son or this daughter of yours seems to fit in, but when it comes right down to it in his heart of hearts, that poor son, that poor daughter of yours has actually denied that God is the only one who counts, and everything else in the world has got to be brought into relationship to him. Oh, that's the awful, sad picture of what's happening to the children of evangelical Christian parents today. It's the saddest thing that there is. And thanks be to God that he gives some of these children the grace with his miracle to rise above this ugly situation. That does not mean you and I have tremendous responsibilities to work at the great cause of Christian education. We owe it to our God. We owe it to our children. And we owe it to our country. Our country. Because if it finally comes to the point where there's only one kind of education in this land, the kind we talked about at the beginning of this lecture, God have mercy upon us. Because it won't be long then, and the end will come. Our responsibilities are unspeakably great. May God give us the bigness of intellect, the greatness of faith, and the courage of spirit to do the job that he wants us to do in this age.